Okay, the problem with calving, and unfortunately, late spring calving calls for July breeding. And some of you who are familiar with some of the research that we've done know that about 5 years ago or so, we did a project at Lanius where we looked at later spring calving and had an absolute wreck. We had a group of cows, and historically we've calved at the Lanius station. I should say now they calve. In a 60-day window, February 15th to April 15th. And every cow on that station just about has come from an original polled Hereford herd that was selected on infected fescue. And the issues of genetic tolerance, and I spoke to Glenn Klippenstein at the break. Those of us who live in fescue country who've been in the cow business a long time, you know, whether it was deliberate or inadvertent, we have been selecting for fescue tolerance for 10, 20, 30, 40 years just by calling out the cows that don't perform. And so their fescue tolerance goes up. And we have a bunch of cows that year in, year out, we run 92 to 93% conception rate on these cows in this sort of fescue environment, though we've really diversified the pasture now. So we thought we had some pretty good cows. Of course, they turned them all black, which to me was a terrible mistake. And we'll come to that here in a minute. They turned them all black. We did this project. We wanted to look at later spring calving, and so we split the herd, and we went to an April 5th. We're in 45. Since 1985, we've been in 45-day seasons. So we went to a April 15th to May 30th calving season on part of the cows. And the first year, 98% conception rate. Ooh, that's pretty, or no, it was 92% conception rate that first year. So, oh, this is fine. This is great. It'll work. Any of you who've ever been to Lanius know that there's no shade there. We don't have any trees in the pasture. I mean, it's just pretty well open. The next year, we had a 68% conception rate. And then the next year, and by that, you know, after dropping to 68%, we began to think, oh, duh, maybe we got a reproductive problem. And so we brought in some of our reproductive people, and they thought it was going to be a bull problem, not a cow problem. So the third year of this study, we ended up with a 48% conception rate. And these are cows that, you know, we're real proud of that have been selected on fescue, and they can handle about anything. And I tell you what, if you calve them February 15th to April 1st, and you breed them, that's basically May 10th to July 25th, or excuse me, June 25th, they do pretty good. Now, if you calve on April 15th, that means the bull goes out on about the 7th day of July. And you know what? It ain't the same ball game. It's not the same ball game at all, and those cows did not perform. Well, why was I so gung-ho to do a late spring calving study? Well, because for 10 years on my own farm with my own cows, I've been calving in that window and doing fine. No problem at all. In a 60-day, in a April-May calving, which is a April 1st, you know, it's a kind of a June 20th to August 20th breeding season, and they did fine. Not a problem. Brahman influence from Barzona. Red bulls instead of black bulls, and a little bit of shade around. Just 7 miles away from where black cattle, no Brahman influence, no shade. All the difference in the world. Man. That's why there's no real easy solutions to the fescue problem. It's because everybody's situation is a little bit different. But I think part of it is adapted animals, changing the pasture situation, and I still question how big a factor the shade was, but there are management things we can do to live with fescue and really make it work. And that one study of anything that I did in, you know, the 20 plus years I was there, that really brought home to me the importance of animal adaptation and having the right animal type in a fescue environment, that was it right there. And I already said, what you see in July and August is there's residual effect of spring toxicity. When you have cows that are spending the biggest part of their day, and this is, you know, the typical lineous pasture, you see the trees back there, but that's on the neighbor, and it's, you know, 100 yards plus away. They're out there in the open, no shade, bunched around the water. This is the one they came out of. It's dried up, but, you know, making the mud wallows. It's very difficult to get cows bred in that situation. But it's very difficult to keep cows in good condition, feeding them infected hay in the winter, calving early. So we start looking at some other solutions. And what Tom told me my job here today was tell you how to get cows bred and perform in a fescue environment. Spring versus fall calving. Breeding season with spring calving, you're breeding when the fescue is most toxic. And that's a problem. If you look at breeding in the fall, November, January, it's pleasantly cool at that time. The cows are typically in good condition. And they breed back very, very well. So we started a fall calving after the crash in the late spring calving program. We went back to, again, split the herd. No, we didn't split the herd. I need to say that back. We started building a fall herd. Where do you suppose we built our fall herd from? Where do a lot of producers build their fall herds? From spring reproductive failures. That's what happens in the fescue environment. We just have a lot of cows that drop out of the spring herd, and my, she's a good cow. You know, she's out of that old 56 cow. She's one of my nicest cows. Yeah, she's open, but I'm going to keep her. I'll just let her calve in the fall. And so that's the way a lot of fall herds get built, is reproductive failures out of spring herds. Okay. I'm going to take another tangent here. The first research, the Linnaeus Station was established in 1970. And the first research project done there compared spring and fall calving. And at that time, the entire farm was infected fall fescue. They did 1 4-year project with spring and fall calving, and then they eliminated the fall herd. Now, there's some people who will say that, well, fall calving, you can't do that, particularly in the north, because it's way too expensive. You have to feed those cows all that, you know, expensive feed, and it just won't work up there. You can't afford to do it. You know why they dropped the fall herd at Linnaeus after one research project? Because there was no problems with it. Every problem that they faced, and this was the Forage Systems Research Center, and was supposed to work with forage systems, you know, beef and the cattle plant, soil interface, all that. Every problem was with the spring herd. And they dropped the fall calving not because it was a problem, but because it was so problem-free. And focused all of our resources and efforts on dealing with the fescue problem in the spring. Well, duh. Maybe we should have just stuck with the fall herd and really rode that horse for all it was worth. Because what's the hottest thing going on in the fescue belt right now as far as adapting to it? Fall calving. So we started our fall herd. And, you know, I started from that premise of we need to match animal demand and forage supply, being the good agronomist that I am. Holy, well, this doesn't have the grass curve on, but use your imagination. Here's the energy demand of that fall cow with peak demand out there in November. How much good grass do we have in November? Well, guess what? There is one grass that grows in the fall of the year that is high quality forage and winters real well and you can run cows on. And what do you suppose that is? Tall fescue. And we actually have ended up with a very good match. Oh, one last thing there. Heat stress is a less factor for fall calves. I don't want to get into that. That's a blank picture. All right. So that brings us into winter grazing. And I think it's very important that people remember, regardless of where you are, and one of the things that really came home from Australia, is the growing season and the grazing season are two entirely different things. Some people only have a 2-month growing season, but they graze 12 months of the year. It's feed budgeting, and feed management that allows you to do that. Now, we have, where I'm located in Missouri right now, we have 5 months of the year where basically grass doesn't grow. We have a 7 month growing season. We've got a 12 month grazing season, if you manage it right. So a lot of work that we've done has been with winter grazing options. And this is, you know, just kind of a stock slide. I use crop residues, stockpiled perennial pasture, winter annual forages. The only one I really want to think about and focus on is that stockpiled tall fescue, because it's one of the very best uses of tall fescue. I always tell people there's five good reasons to grow fescue. November, December, January, February, and March. Those are the five best reasons to have fescue on your farm. Whether, and again, I'm really looking at from southern Iowa, central Illinois, down probably into Tennessee, northern Arkansas, that and extending out to the Atlantic, that belt through there. That is where winter grazing tall fescue is the big money maker for the cow business. You know, again, the pictures here, crop residue on the front side of winter, winter annuals front side and back side, but the big bulk of going through the winter is stockpiled perennial pastures. Jump from the fescue country, again, out to the sandhills of Nebraska. And
did I just do something with that?
No. Still there working? Okay. It's the work that Don Adams, Dick Clark, what they've done out at the Gunnison Ranch in Nebraska, of wintering cows on standing native range, again, protein supplementation, much, much cheaper than feeding them hay, taking the calf crop and being a much more profitable option than the traditional feeding hay approach. We've done the same sort of thing there. This is, this study that we have with fall calving cows at Linnaeus, I still have a hard time saying that they have at Linnaeus. This is just the first year's data from winter of 2001-2002. This year's data I haven't had time to add into there. But, and this is for November 13th, March 19th period. Cow average daily gain. These are lactating cows going through the winter and still gaining weight. On annual ryegrass, they get fat as pigs in the winter time. Hay and creek feed, this is the standard way we do things for fall calving. Cows lose weight. Full condition score lost there. Calf average daily gain, 2.25 pounds. This year, this past winter, they did a little better than that. 2.45 on the annual ryegrass, about 2 pounds on the hay and creek feed. Conception rates, and this is where I again want to mention, remember this fall herd was built from reproductive failures in the spring herd, and so they're probably a little bit reproductively challenged anyway. 83% conception rate, 93% on the ryegrass. Cows that fat, these cows came out of the winter, condition score over 7. You would hope that they would breed, 93%. So they did that there. This is where cost comes into play, and what did it cost to do that? There's the cow. They're big cows. You know, I wasn't going to lie and tell you they were 1,200-pound cows. We just figured their intake at 2.8% of body weight. There's the pounds of forage, just kind of standardized across it. This is the cost per day for maintaining a cow, the annual ryegrass. But the stockpiled tall fescue at 31 cents, basically one-fourth the cost of wintering a cow on hay. And you saw the performance, better cow performance, better calf performance at 25% of the cost. Infected tall fescue, fall calving cows. We have an awful hard time taking spring calving cows on infected fescue and getting that kind of performance out of them. And now we're sitting here in April with 500-pound calves. What are our marketing options here? We can sell them to the grass-hungry backgrounders. We can keep them ourselves and get some of that cheap spring grass gain on them. November 1st, sitting there with 500-pound calves, what do we have? Selling on the lowest market of the year as opposed to selling on the highest market of the year. If we want to background them, we're going to have to put some expensive feed into them. So the marketing options come out better, quite a bit better here on the fall calving cows in that fescue environment. Cost for wintering, and this is based on a 130-day wintering period. Doing hay at that $1.32 a day, $172 to winter a cow, a cow-calf pair. Stockpiled fall fescue at 31 cents. And then here I have 90 days of grazing, 40 days of hay. Winter before last, we fed hay 19 days. This past winter, zero. Not 1 pound of hay put into our fall calving cows. Grazed on stockpiled pasture the entire winter. The grass was starting, the spring flush, the spring growth was starting to come where they were standing. We just let them stay there. March 28th, those calves weighed 504 pounds. That $70 to winter cow was based on this 90-40. If on the grazing all winter, less than $42 to winter a cow-calf pair on stockpiled fescue pasture. That is how we breed cows on fescue, Tom. That's how we make money with cows on fescue. And I might mention, I've been in North Missouri 22 years, and I have never seen a winter there that the snow was too deep for cows to graze if they knew they had to do that for a living. If you like carrying hay out as soon as you get three snowflakes in the air, you know, you're kind of screwed. But if you train your cows that they have to work for a living and a foot or 15 inches of snow is not a problem, as long as you provide that stockpile pasture below that snow for them, they'll hustle and they'll make a living. The $108 there on the ryegrass. Big difference there. And that is the difference between whether or not you make money on a fall calving cow. It's how you feed it. All right, the last things that I have here are some of those management factors for dealing with fescue. And it comes back to, we're going to tell you what we told you, is dilution. The solution, I think I was at that same meeting where Joe Burns first said that the solution to pollution is dilution. And so we can dilute it, legumes and other grasses. Kind of our bread and butter dilution over the years has been red clover. Now, one of the problems that we get with red clover is we can get too much protein in the diet, especially if we're using it to crowd out the fescue. We can get too much protein in the diet. We can get ammonia toxicity, and we can get the same type of heat stress symptoms on red clover fescue pastures as we get on infected fescue if we get too much out there. So we're really looking for 30 to 50% of the pasture component as the legume. We get much more than that, and we can have too much non-protein nitrogen in the diet. Carl mentioned crabgrass. And we have had the same experience with crabgrass. It's a fabulous summer forage. It's just a beautiful ecological balance with fescue. As the fescue fades away in late spring, the crabgrass comes in. And our experience has been that we actually get a little better animal performance when we have the crabgrass as the dilutant, rather than just red clover. Now, most of the time we have fescue, crabgrass, red clover as the three principal components in the summertime, and it does real well. We have a lot more diversity out there also. But crabgrass in the summertime and infected fescue, again, through that kind of southern Iowa down to the central Tennessee, northern Arkansas, real good solution. Keep it vegetative. Already made the point, the leaves are less toxic than the stem. Whether it's through good grazing management, through clipping, through taking some of the spring flush off of the hay, the faster you can get it out of that reproductive phase down to a vegetative condition, the less toxicity problem we're going to have. And those of you who, a lot of animal science, cattlemen and animal scientists here, I think cattlemen understand this better Cattlemen understand it better than animal scientists. As a plant gets taller, it makes more shade. Trees are the real good illustration of that. Big, tall trees have a lot of shade. We like to get under it because it's cooler, don't get sunburned. Well, as grass plants get taller, they make more shade. And other species that don't grow as tall, white clover being a good example, crabgrass being an example, that shade's not good for them also. So if we can eliminate that reproductive phase, which creates most of the shade in the pasture, the sooner we get rid of that shade, the more likely we are to get that flush of summer annual grasses, of legumes out there. So keeping it vegetative benefits the animal from a toxicity standpoint, but it also benefits the pasture from a diversity standpoint. Avoidance, you know, the classic complementary grazing system of get them off the fescue entirely, put them on a warm season grass. In the South, that tends to be Bermuda grass. In the Midwest, it tends to be native tall grasses, big blue switchgrass, eastern gamma, stuff like that. You can just, through that most toxic fescue period, put them on something else. Of course, then you have a mess of toxic fescue you have to deal with at the end of the summer. So maybe it's not the best. Warm season grasses, novel endophytes, or endophyte-free fescues, alfalfa. Alfalfa is a great summer grazing forage. And believe it or not, most places where you can grow fescue with a little bit of lime, you can grow some alfalfa too. You might have to replace it from time to time, but the economics of having something other than toxic fescue to graze pays for a lot of pasture renovation. I think, again, both previous speakers alluded to the cost, the high cost of renovating, of eliminating toxic fescue and replacing with something else. Vic Jacobs, who was our forage livestock economist at University of Missouri, retired in late 80s, he showed many, many years ago the cost benefit of eliminating infected fescue and replacing with endophyte-free. And he showed that it was profitable to do that with as little as 3 years persistence on the endophyte-free. I mean, the animal loss, that $600 million a year, is a tremendous price to pay for having infected fescue around. And, well, half a pound of, you know, if you run a steer for 150 days, and he gains a pound and a half instead of a pound, that's 75 pounds additional gain. At a steer to the acre and a value of gain at 50 cents, you know, that's $37.50 actually. It's $37.50 a year additional income from having the higher animal gain. Part of that goes to maintenance costs, but that's giving you a pretty good chunk of change over a 3 year period of time to do some pasture renovation. And then the planned cow herd to maximize use when fescue is least toxic. And the best solution that we have found, I believe, is fall calving, grazing stockpiled fescue. And as recently as 10 years ago, I did not advocate fall calving in North Missouri because I did not think that we could graze fall cows the entire winter on stockpiled fescue. We have learned so much more about how to consistently grow a higher quality stockpile, utilize it efficiently, that, you know, I'm confident 9 years out of 10, we can take cows. No, I don't want to say that. 6 years out of seven, because I've actually done the risk analysis. 6 years out of seven, we can run cows the entire winter on stockpiled pasture. That's going to be pretty cheap. And if there's anybody, because I don't have cards or anything like that, and who knows where I'm going to be next week, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, yeah, I don't have a university address anymore. I'm using that Hotmail until I get somewhere else. There's an email and phone number where you can get in touch with me. And I think, Tom, that's probably about what I had to say about that.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.